Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, we're concluding our series on the media with a look inside Minnesota Public Radio. Throughout the series, you've asked a lot of well-informed questions about fake news and anonymous sources and media bias, and some of them have been aimed specifically at how we here at Minnesota Public Radio handle those issues. So I asked our executive director of news and programming here at NPR News if she would sit in and take your questions and talk about decision-making in our newsroom. I think of this as a chance for us to be more transparent about the principles and the tenets that guide NPR News. And I thought I'd give you some things to think about, although you're welcome to call in and tweet in any questions that come to mind. Do you feel like you have an understanding of how and why NPR News as a whole covers the stories and the subjects that we do? Do you have an understanding of that? Is there a particular subject like criminal justice or athletics or technology that you don't hear enough of on this show? So you can also direct some of your comments and your questions to me as well. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Again, with a question about whether you have a sense of understanding about how and why NPR News as a whole covers the stories and the subjects that we do. And then if you'd like to hear more conversation on this show from me about specific topics, I welcome that as well. Here's the number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Nancy Cassett is Executive Director of News and Programming for Minnesota Public Radio News. She's with me in the studio. I'm really grateful that you're doing this because I've worked here 13 years and I've never been able to lure the head of news into the studio. So thank you.
Happy to be here. Happy to be here. I have a choice on this, Carrie?
I was like, oh, come on. Yeah. You can do this. I'm going to jump in, Nancy, right away on something that I think has dogged public radio for a long time. And it's this idea that when listeners listen to us, National Public Radio or Minnesota Public Radio News, they think they're detecting a liberal bias. So what can you say about that?
I actually figured that would be the first question you'd ask me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that label has, I've been in the business for more than 30 years. That label has been with me and journalists for that long.
Because you were also in local television news.
Correct.
And that's dogged you as well there?
For all those years, right. Right. I ran a local television newsroom. I've worked in a online newsroom, and the liberal media label continues to hang over us. And so at this point, I kind of have to say, you know, we're tracking at NPR News, we track our listener comments. And what's interesting, so that, you know, we're having data in,
mm-hmm.
and we look at the comments, and people now on both sides, if there are both sides, or probably there are multiple sides, as we know, that say, you're so liberal. Carrie Miller is so liberal. And then we have it, why is Carrie Miller or one of our other hosts so conservative? Why are you doing this? And so what I'd say is, even looking at those comments, I feel as if maybe today our goal is to be in the center lane, but that we actually are a little more in the center lane, because I'm getting the data that's telling me that. Our job is to continue to act independently and without fear or favor, and to walk the center lane. And the truth of the matter is, we come in every day to be curious about the news and what's going on, and to help answer questions you might have as an audience member. I don't think of that label. I just don't think of that label. And I'm hoping that we can at someday get rid of that label.
Insight from this show, when I talk to, and we do this every week, we have news analysis or opinion from the conservative side. I mean, and strictly conservative. We do an op-ed on Tuesday mornings. That generates as much email as I get all week, because people are asking why I have to give time to voices and views from the right side of the political spectrum? And the answer is, and I think it's articulated in the way you did too, we want to hear all views so we're as informed with what Americans are thinking and debating as we can be.
Right. And do you think, Carrie, that you, when you were doing this show 5 years ago, did you put on a whole show with a conservative view?
I think we were still trying to do that, yeah.
Good.
Because we were in the Obama years, yeah. Right?
And just
and
a note for the audience.
There was a lot of critique of that, right?
Right. And for the audience, I've been here. I've worked at the company more than 6.5 years, but I've been in this role just a little over a year.
Right.
So while I listen to Carrie Miller, of course, all the time,
yes.
I hadn't been listening a few years ago as much as I do today.
Question from Will on Twitter here, and I think this kind of gets to what we were talking about. He says, why don't you call liars liars?
That is a really good question. And we've talked about it in our editorial meetings here in the newsroom. And just so the audience understands, you know, we have National Public Radio, right? And then Minnesota Public Radio. My role is to oversee the Minnesota Public Radio news and programming. And National Public Radio actually made a decision that they were not going to label President Trump's comments, things he said, as lies. And the reason was that nobody could actually get into his head and know what the motive was. And so we have debated in this newsroom if we want to go far afield from that decision. And at this point, we have decided that we're not going to label someone a liar. Pretty strong comment and label for someone. But, you know, as things progress, it may be revisited. But at this point, that's why. It's we don't know what's in someone's head.
So to be clear on this, to label someone a liar is to say that they intend to deceive. And it's hard to At the moment to say that that is the motivation that President Trump is pursuing.
Yeah,
he's intending
right.
to deceive.
Right. I think that's exactly it. We do not know what his intent is.
To the phones to Jeff in Side Lake. Hey, Jeff. Hi.
Say, one of the topics I'd like to have NPR discuss more about is the rising cost of higher education. You have a lot of kids that are coming out of a four-year program, incredibly in debt. And one of the things that bothers me the most is I see college coaches making millions of dollars a year, and I'm not sure if that money should be going to coaches or if it should be going to help lower the cost of tuition.
So Jeff, it sounds like you want to hear more about the specifics of the economics of how of what colleges do with their money, as also pertains to tuition. Is that right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And like I said, you know, kids are coming out of school just incredibly in debt, and I'm not sure if it's fair for kids, and I'm wondering if it's steering kids away from a four-year program.
So this is something I know has been somewhat recently on your mind, because you had two girls in college at one point.
Right, exactly.
So you thought about this.
I have, right. Saving for it. And you're right. I mean, Jeff, that's a NPR News actually has, we have two beats in the newsroom. One, we have an education beat that's more high school focused. And we have Peter Cox, a reporter who covers higher education. And this is a topic that we've talked about, but, excuse me, we have not invested as much time as I think we need to. College is unaffordable. Even for people who have full-time jobs and get help, it's still daunting. I have a daughter who wants to go now back to school after her college degree. And we're trying to figure out, how are we going to pay for that?
So you're confronting the cost of grad school, too.
Yeah, grad school, right. So, Jeff, good point. You should also know that as a company, we have talked about education as an initiative to do impactful reporting for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
You as someone out there, Jeff, who's concerned about this. And we're sort of working on what that looks like. And we will put this idea in the hopper because money in college is probably one of the toughest things that parents are confronting today.
Josh says on Twitter, free thinkers want to hear every side. The best idea can come from anywhere to achieve the greatest good for the most people. To Dennis in St. Joseph. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Hey.
I've listened to you people, and I appreciate your view, the other side, the other viewpoint. That's why I listened to you. Even when I disagreed with you, I listened to what you were doing. Now, and I called you several times, and you seem to want to go to a different direction, and I appreciate that. Now, I'll be honest with you. I've talked to you about how you attacked Donald Trump. You brought guests in that were against Donald Trump. I've actually seen people laugh about it, but it wasn't a joke, and I was upset. But you have changed now. I've noticed a change in MPNR that you're trying to get both sides, and I appreciate that.
Dennis, we appreciate the remarks from you. I've got a lot of people on the lines. If you don't mind, I'll put that back to Nancy and say I think what Dennis is hearing is maybe some information coming from our audience that has helped guide us in the way that we're thinking about how we're going to cover what is a unprecedented kind of political landscape.
Right. I think you're safe in saying that. And, you know, here's a word that I've actually stopped using as someone who is leading a newsroom and mm-hmm. worked in the business is sort of that idea of balance.
You've stopped using
the
word balance.
I have.
Interesting.
I have.
Why?
Because that word to me connotes there's this side and then there's another side. And I think the idea is, can we be fair? And in order to do that, it's just not two sides to things, right? And that is something that I've been educated myself over the years, is that there are multiple sides to stories, not just one or the other. And so I kind of have discontinued using that word. I was just talking to a reporter this morning who was talking about an audience member who complained about something he had done on menthol cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I had four voices in that story that had four different viewpoints on this one topic. And he said, you're right. This person had another idea for two other angles that I couldn't get to. So it's, you know, stack that away for another day because right. we can do that story.
We had NPR Ombudsman Elizabeth Jensen. This is National Public Radio's Ombudsman on the show. And she said, since we're back to kind of political bias, she said that dominates the complaints that she gets. And she goes through every kind of comment that comes in. And she says they get lots of complaints of liberal bias. She gets thousands of complaints about conservative bias. And I pulled two examples that she's posted just to give you a sense again about if you think your view dominates the complaints, I think this is going to give you a wider perspective. So here's two examples that come into the NPR Ombudsman from a listener in Olympia, Washington. It's clear that NPR's nationally syndicated shows, and in particular Morning Edition, continue to push a conservative viewpoint and no longer provide any counterbalance of progressive views. The deck is stacked with conservative voices, which remain unchallenged by your reporters. Quote, what happened to NPR? And here's from a listener in Miami, Florida. I am in disbelief at the unfair, biased coverage against this president. Every single piece I hear across the board in all NPR programs is negative and very hateful. It is so obvious. Shame on NPR.
Wow. You know, she's coming to town in 2 weeks and coming to this
Elizabeth
newsroom.
Is?
She is.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that.
You know, having an ombudsman, that for NPR to be able to have that role
yeah.
is incredibly important. You know, we've talked about that in this newsroom. Can we afford to, or can we not afford to bring an ombudsman in here to check ourselves?
And the value of them is they're kind of the liaison between audience and the public and the news organization. They can get answers in a way that maybe sometimes the public can't.
Right. That's really important. And really, do people really understand what an ombudsman's role is? Right.
Yeah.
Good point. In this newsroom, I will tell you, I've been in a lot of newsrooms, but there, you know, we have three editorial meetings a day, two that are longer, one's very short in the afternoon. We are constantly checking each other on how do we report that story? What are the words we are using?
Let me ask you this about that. What's the last time that where an editorial meeting was, I don't know, kind of heated, where there was a real full debate about an issue and there were strong sides taken?
Mm-hmm. I would say it probably, you know, every afternoon following our editorial decision conversation, which is probably 15 minutes, mm-hmm. there's a reflection on the day before's news. How did we handle it? How many, we've talked about how many diverse voices did we have on the air? How many different viewpoints do we have on the air? How did this story get handled? Could it have been handled in a different way? And so actually there's a conversation right now going on in the newsroom about the situation in Bloomington mm-hmm. at the mosque. Should that have been labeled terrorism? And the Trump administration has not labeled it as such.
Governor Dayton
has. Our governor
has.
And so at this point, you know, everyone is waiting actually for the conclusion of the investigation because it's a volatile word. And it has lots of different meanings to lots of different people. So that one was the last conversation.
Okay. To the phones to Deborah in Minneapolis. Hey, Deborah, hi.
Hi. I think in most media coverage, Native Americans are just not included at all. It's like they don't exist or they're invisible. You had a recent panel on, I think it was talking about affirmative action, and there was African-American, Latina, and Asian-American woman. In terms of police violence against people of color, African or Native Americans suffer the most police brutality, but it seems like they don't exist, and that's why I listen to KFAI. They have two programs that are done by Native people.
Okay. Deborah, I appreciate that. Nancy, how do you think about that?
Well, Deborah, thanks for the call because one of our editors just mentioned that exact conversation to me about 25 minutes ago. I'll tell you that there are people in this newsroom who are making sources in many, many different communities. And we've focused on the water issue in this state. And we have found many Native American sources for that particular topic. And so I think the idea of us spreading some of those sources into other areas would be beneficial for us. So I hear you, and we're working on it.
And Deborah, I have to say, you're right about this. We've done a lot of shows on police violence. We've had a show about Native Americans and police interactions on our board for months, and we haven't gotten to it. So your critique is well taken, and I think you've inspired us to go back and plan that show. Here's Alex. He says on Twitter, considering the criticism of the media, what role do you think NPR's newsroom has in the relationship between journalists and audience? And then he adds to this, what do you see being the biggest challenge when it comes to the relationship with journalists and audiences, especially in the digital age?
Good question.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, let me just say, and I don't think we've had a chance to say this, which is trust between us and all of you out there in the audience is paramount. If we do not have trust with our audience, we have nothing. Just like because this is a relationship. And look at radio, this intimate medium. If we do not have trust with you, then we have really lost it. And I know that the media reputation is about as low as it's ever been.
I think we're under lawyers.
We are.
At the moment.
Above Congress. It makes me sad, but every day we are here to earn your trust. And I know I speak for everyone in the newsroom. They feel the same way. They're very committed to doing straight up journalism to the best of our ability and to be transparent about what we're doing, how we're doing it, and allowing the audience, like just like this, to give us feedback. We are humans. We are doing our best. And maybe that sounds like a cop-out. It's not.
Well, it sounds like a principle that we're aspiring to and not, mm-hmm. and some days hitting it out of the park and some days not.
Exactly.
And we have to acknowledge that.
Exactly. And you know what? The days we don't hit it out of the park, we talk about it. And we hopefully have learned and changed.
This is a conversation really toward that idea of transparency, bringing you in as listeners and consumers of Minnesota Public Radio to the way decisions get made within NPR News, to give you a sense about how we cover the news, why we cover the stories we do, how we're thinking about this trust relationship between you and us, and some of the other big ideas that have come up during this media series that I've been doing for the last 7 weeks. So this is a question to think about. Do you feel like you have an understanding of how and why NPR News as a whole covers the stories and the subjects that we do? And it's really valuable to have you call in and say, I want to hear more of, and let me know. Let me know what that is in your world. 651-227-6000. I should say Nancy Cassett is in the studio here to talk about this. She's executive director of news and programming for NPR. And we kind of said, yeah, if this goes well, she'll do this a couple of times a year because she's the first one to do it in more than a decade. So 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR, to Bruce in Northfield. Hey, Bruce, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well.
I just have to tell you that I'm a conservative Republican. I listen to NPR all the time. And my conservative friends often say the same thing. We love the way you guys are doing things, and I've seen it change for the better. But that's not why I called. but I'm happy for you guys. I'm a statistician also, and yeah. We always learn and teach that correlation is not causation. And confirmation bias is when you pick the variables out of a set of 25 variables that explain what you're trying to explain. If you can pick them sometimes and get the same explanation power. And I don't see you challenging, especially the social scientists who come on, often coming on with bias, or it seems like they're biased. And I'm just wondering how much practice and training you have in your editorial staff and in your reporting staff to deal with the kinds of statistical lies that we can do. As a statistician, I get to say that we can do.
Yeah. No, Bruce, I think maybe I'll tackle this one, Nancy, because this sounds more like kind of the conversations that I have. Bruce, this is such an excellent comment, and I wrestle with this a lot because I'm interested in what the latest study says, the new research that's coming out from, you know, researchers and social scientists that I enjoy talking to, because it's often, you know, their work is often reflected somehow of our culture or the ideas that a lot of us are talking about. But I think very frequently about, is this study going to say this today, and is another study in another year going to completely, you know, disavow that? And I have a guest in mind for this. I've talked with Jean Twenge out of the University of San Diego numerous times. She does research on millennials. The shows are great. People call in. They're really good conversations. But I found myself, when she's got a new study out, as she does right now, I found myself saying, let's let the dust settle. I just heard her on NPR a couple days ago, and I thought, that'd make a great show. And then I thought, let's let the dust settle a little bit on. Let's see what happens with the science that follows this. And so, Bruce, I don't have specific training on statistics, but experience is teaching me about how to handle the latest study and the statistics that end up in research. Bruce, are you still there?
I am indeed.
Well, how
really
does that sound?
The trick is always to recognize that confirmation bias that the speaker, the author is coming in with, represents a worldview which is not necessarily supported by the data, but they're able to make it feel like it is. And they're often very sincere and very intense because that's what they're looking for. And science, as a scientist, when I worked at a major medical center doing research, we learned very early and very often that our studies had to be very carefully vetted. And social science often is just an observational report. And I hate to see it being used to make decisions by our politicians. So it's a very complex problem.
I'm really glad your voice will be in my head the next time we're ready to schedule a conversation. You may still hear those discussions, but I want you to know that I'm coming at them with more skepticism, and I really appreciate your perspective on that. Let me grab a call here from Jennifer in Stillwater. Hi, Jennifer. What are you thinking about today?
Hi, yeah. You asked us to tell you what we would like to hear more coverage
sure.
of on Minnesota Public Radio.
Yeah.
I would specifically point to two things. The wolves being delisted by Amy Klobuchar, even though 79% of Minnesotans took a DNR poll and said we didn't want them delisted.
Uh-huh.
And Rick Nolan as well. Also, the copper sulfide mining that's going on with PolyMet and Twin Metals. And it doesn't get, like, hardly any coverage that it's actually the DFL, Rick Nolan, Tim Walz, Amy Klobuchar, who are they have bills to both delist our wolves and trade away our land in the Lake Superior National Forest.
Okay, so Jennifer, let me do this. What I hear in this is you don't feel like you're hearing enough coverage of perhaps environmental issues and specifically on those issues. And I know we have a reporter who's been, Dan Crocker's been doing some coverage on this, hasn't
Correct.
He, Nancy?
Right. You're right. And yeah, Dan Crocker covers the Duluth area and region, and he covers multiple mining stories. And we actually have a couple editors in the newsroom who are, I would have to say, I mean, experts a little strong, but really, really well versed in all the moves when it comes to the mining issues in northern Minnesota. That said, we probably could be doing more. And what we're doing right now is sort of covering twists and turns in what's going on. But point taken, Jennifer, and I'll talk to our editors. I mean, like I said, we've got reporters up there in Duluth and in Moorhead and in the other parts of the state. So thank you for the call.
Philip says, love the interesting science pieces. Good, Philip, because I love science, too. I appreciate learning more about the issues as opposed to persons' opinions about them. Kayla says on Twitter, I wish you guys would cover more of the issues that teachers face today. No other career has paychecks that force a second job. You know what? It's been a long time since I've done a conversation about teaching. So, Kayla, point taken on that. And, Nancy, we have an education beat in the newsroom.
We do. Solveig Wasfett is our education reporter and does probably, I'd say, a story a week on education, but it's pretty broad, right? And so, the teacher challenges, what's going on in the classrooms? Well, as school begins, you will be hearing more about that.
We just heard a conversation with somebody in the organization who was saying that there are very, very few male teachers of color, even as that population is rising in public schools. And we all said, hey, that's a show.
Hey, that's, yeah, and a few stories.
Yeah, exactly. To the phones to Jeff in St. Joseph. Hey, Jeff, hi.
I was wondering about if there's any topics that are kind of taboo or off topic that you can't cover.
Good question.
Like the Spotlight movie.
Oh, okay. So controversial, Jeff, that even we in the newsroom would shy away from covering them?
Exactly.
Huh.
Like in the Boston Globe Spotlight with the Catholic Church.
Right. Can you think of anything, Nancy?
In that case, I think it was not that they intentionally didn't want to cover it. They didn't practically see
what was
in front of their face.
Right.
I think... off the top of my head, I can't think of it, but here's what I will say. There are stories that we end up covering as a reported story, you know, a 3 or 4 minute story on the radio. And sometimes I'll hear those stories and think that would be a much better show because you get time to breathe with a topic and you get just as Carrie does every day or Tom Weber does, where you get to have the other viewpoints, because sometimes a 3 and 4 minute story just isn't enough. Which is still pretty good amount of time on the radio. But so that's what I would say the difference would be for us as far as choosing when and how to do those stories.
This is the finale of our summer-long media series, and Nancy Cassett, who heads up news and programming here at Minnesota Public Radio News, is in the studio with me, taking your calls and your questions about how we make editorial decisions within the newsroom, why we cover some subjects, and maybe you don't hear as much on others. Some of the principles and the tenets that guide the show that I do every day and the newsroom at large. Welcoming your calls on this, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, @Kerri, KERRI, NPR. We're going to get a look at the latest news, then right back to your calls and questions on the other side. Phil Picardi now. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Carrie. North Korea has announced a detailed plan to launch a salvo of missiles toward the U.S. Pacific territory of Guam, a major military hub and home to U.S. bombers. If carried out, it would be the North's most provocative missile launch to date. Japan and South Korea quickly vowed a strong reaction if the North goes through with that plan. The North says the plan could be sent to leader Kim Jong-un for approval within a week or so. Yemen is seeing the largest outbreak of cholera ever recorded in that country, in any country in a single year. The country's raging two-year conflict has turned into an incubator for disease. The International Committee of the Red Cross says one in every 120 Yemenis is now suspected of being sick with cholera. At least 27 people have been killed in clashes between police and protesters in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Human Rights Watch says three police officers are among the dead. The majority of the deaths were in the capital, Kinshasa. A study released today says the Trump administration's actions are triggering double-digit premium increases on many individual health insurance policies. The Kaiser Family Foundation finds mixed signals from President Trump and health care reform have created uncertainty, and that, it says, is leading insurers to seek higher premium increases for 2018. And a U.S. government weather forecaster says there are no active El Niño or La Niña patterns, and neutral conditions are favored in the Northern Hemisphere through 2017-2018 winter. However, the forecaster says the chances of neutral conditions are likely to fall from about 85% between July and September to 55% between December and February. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 9:38.
I'm Tom Weber. Coming up on NPR News at 11 o'clock, I'll visit with the new chair of the Met Council. And there's a big party this weekend, the official grand reopening of the state capitol. You'll hear more about the building's history and the renovation project that leads to this weekend. Join us at 11.
Why am I really psyched about fall? Well, Talking Volumes starts on September 14th. We are sold out from a number of those shows. Still some tickets available for others. Check it out at the Fitzgerald Theater box office and our new national call-in show about the issues that both divide us and unite us. It's called Flyover. Well, that starts on Sunday, September 10th, 3 p.m. Central. So I hope you listen to that. I am really psyched for fall. Hope you are too.
Programming supported by Midwest Homes Luxury Remodeling Tour, showcasing 12 unique and inspiring remodeling projects around the Twin Cities. Two weekends starting August 12th. Tickets at Kowalski's Market and at luxremodelingtour.com.
Back to our conversation now with Nancy Cassett. She's Executive Director of News and Programming for NPR News, trying to give you a sense about how we see the news and how we cover the stories that we cover and the decision-making that gets done inside NPR News. Nancy, so I have seen a bit of the research that comes back from people who listen to NPR and people who don't. And this is straight out of the here's one of the raps on NPR. And you've probably heard this. People who only listen occasionally tell us that we are, quote, boring, monotone, and elitist. Are we at times?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, okay.
Don't we have to own that?
We have to own that. I know. Boring.
Monotone.
That's a bad word. You're
elitist.
Right. Elitist. Those are three words that are posted in my office.
Are they?
Actually know that I've read the same research. Yeah. I mean, we need to be a little more lively. And what does that mean? Without losing.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, I think that when people tune into the radio or tune into our stream, I think they want to know that people are awake and that we do interesting news, interesting, informative news, and explanatory. And sometimes that can lead into a little boring, but we really try not to do that. And so this is a conversation that we are and will be having more of.
I think maybe public radio gets knocked and fairly at times for being too earnest and too aware that we have to be serious. And the gravitas that we think we have to own gets in the way of being interesting to listen to and lively and high energy.
I know, but as someone who's worked in the television industry where
we
everything
both have.
Right, is right. Everything's a soundbite.
Right.
Everything is high energy. And I love my friends in television news. This is not a criticism, but it's the medium, right? And in this medium, you can sit back for a minute and listen and have a thoughtful conversation and have it be lively and engaging and educational.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, I mean, this is what we get to do in at NPR News. So yay for us, right? But we don't want to do the eat your vegetable news every day. But there are times when there are important things that we need to spend some time in. And what I would say is we're using our different platforms to sort of take you on a journey with different kinds of stories. Sometimes it's a radio discussion.
Right.
Sometimes,
for 45 minutes. Which is unusual in this medium, too.
Very unusual. And sometimes it's a 3-minute story, or sometimes it's an 8-minute story, or sometimes it's a photo on Twitter.
Right. We got a lot of, we did a show devoted to fake news, to a conversation about that. One of the things that came out for me on that show was, sometimes fake news is in the eye of the beholder. Sometimes fake news is obvious to everyone. And the news consumers have a hard time sorting that out.
Right.
How do you think about this?
Well, I've been thinking a lot about fake news. And I almost even hate to use those two words. But, you know, there's a recent Pew study that said 25% of Americans, either deliberately or unknowingly, they've shared fake news.
Wow.
That's pretty high.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are some reasons that people, first of all, we should define fake news very narrowly,
mm-hmm.
right? It's news that will deliberately spread falsehoods. And that's a fact. And, but people will do it for three reasons often. They'll do it for profit. They'll do it for partisanship. And they'll do it for fun.
So yeah. Are these the makers of the fake news, or are these the conveyors of the fake news? Because I think people who spread what would be obvious to us as fake news on social media aren't always aware that that's what it is.
I think you're right. I think it's the makers.
Okay.
I mean, we've read multiple stories about people sitting in an apartment in somewhere in New York or Boston creating fake news for fun. That is just
right.
Very disheartening, but it's happening. It's irresponsible journalism. You know, and there are websites out there. If you really care about this topic and you want to make sure that you're not reading fake news, there are a couple websites you can investigate and go read, because they will flag fake news. They've dug in on the various stories. You know, Snopes.com is one of them. The factcheck.org
right.
is another, right?
Right.
And Polyfact. So those are three areas that if you really care, you can go check out.
Call here from Beth in Minneapolis. Hey, Beth, thanks so much for waiting. Hi. Hey, Beth, are you there? Ah, we might have lost her. To Roger in Zimbrota. Hey, Roger, hi. Are you there?
Hey.
Hi.
Yes, I am. Thanks for taking a call.
What'd you want to say?
I want to say that I feel that NPR, and I've been listening to you for 20 years, I don't think because you rely on money from donations, I don't think you go after issues like single-payer health plan, which should be already part of the country, because you rely on donations from insurance companies and corporations. So I think your organization has to worry about the money and sometimes give up on important issues like that.
Roger, I think this is important because, as you say, you've listened for 20 years. You may have missed the show that I did, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago on a Monday about single payer.
And I was on that show, yeah.
You heard it. Okay. So,
oh, yeah, I heard it.
Okay, so why are you saying that we're not covering single payer when you heard the show?
Because I've been listening for 20 years, and this is the first time
oh, no.
I've ever heard you guys talk.
Oh,
about
no.
What?
No, Roger. I've talked about it a lot. But I think you've brought up an interesting point about, are there some stories we won't pursue because we've got underwriting from organizations and it might put us crosswise with them? How do you think about that, Nancy?
I have to say I love that question because they're in this newsroom. And I can't say, I'm not speaking for other newsrooms, but what we call the firewall between what we do in our newsroom and our independent judgment and thinking
mm-hmm.
is ours. I don't know what underwriting is doing. I don't know who they're pursuing.
Well, you hear it on the air because you listen a lot.
You're
like
right,
I
Carrie.
Do, right?
You're absolutely right. I can hear it, but it is one of those. How do I label this? The institution of underwriting, sales, and news. The lines have been blurred, but in this business, in NPR Newsroom, it has not. And so we are not motivated by that. In fact, I think we would put up our dukes and fight as hard as possible if that ever bled into this newsroom. And maybe that sounds Pollyanna to people out there. It is true. It is absolutely true. And again, I've been in the business more than 30 years, and this place is surrounded by the independents.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a time, if there has ever been a time in my 13 years here where anybody has said, well, we don't want to tick them off because they spend a lot of money with NPR.
No. I mean, we may have taken some underwriting that could be controversial, but I don't even know about it until it's on the radio.
Rob says on Twitter, want to hear all sides, but likely true, most sustaining members are liberal like me, want you to challenge all guests directly. I wonder if Rob's assumption about that is true.
What do you think,
that
Carrie?
All sustaining members
are?
I don't know. I don't see the research like you do. My sense is no, but yeah.
You know, I don't know if we have research on our sustaining members in that way
about
and their political views. But, you know, one thing that we are doing is we are tracking, you know, the types of guests that we have on our radio to make sure, again, to speak to some of the data. How, you know, what is the ethnicity, the racial makeup of the people that we are interviewing every day that you all in the audience get to hear from? And we are checking ourselves on that. We actually are very intentional and have someone in our newsroom working on that right now.
Mike says on Twitter, elitist, yes. Very little for people who are not intellectuals. When you discuss employment, you almost always target professionals. Riley says, listening to NPR is like eating your vegetables. No!
Stop!
Oh, Riley. Oh, my gosh. He says, it may not be exciting, but it's good for you. That's not good enough, I don't think, in this media environment.
No, it is our job
to... We can't be the eating the vegetables people.
No. We want to have broccoli with cheese and salt on it or something. I don't know. I mean, there's...
How about sautéed Brussels sprouts?
Something like that sounds
elitist, doesn't it? It does, kind of. Michael has a question for me. How do you screen callers handling obscene, rude callers that are way off topic? And Michael, thank you. He says, thanks. You're my favorite on NPR. Okay. Here's what happens. There are producers in the control room. So we have a director who's handling the show and she's making sure that music plays when it should and everything. She's managing it. And then we have a producer who's taking the calls, and that's the person that you're interacting with. And if you are way off topic, or you're going to swear at us, or you're swearing at her, you're not getting on the air. If you want to challenge me, you are getting on the air. If you want to challenge the guest, we're going to try to get you on the air. I mean, I do very few shows where there aren't full phone lines. So you're competing with a lot of people who want to get on the air. But if you're going to be rude, obscene, or just an overall jerk, call somebody else, because, you know, I don't think anybody else wants to hear you either. Neither do I. What do you think of that, Nancy? Uh-oh.
I think, well, you've described it accurately. I see the engineer, I see the producers, and you're right. No swearing. We don't want to swear.
Right. Can we say something about flyover? Because I'm excited about this, and you're leading the charge
on this. I have to
tell
you, right. We have for people who don't know,
right.
Starting September 10th, we have a live show on the weekend called Flyover. I'll have Carrie talk about how it got named that way. And the idea is that we want to continue the conversation that we had with our show Indivisible that we launched in the first 100 days of the Donald Trump administration, where we want to hear what you think about what's going on. And let's be clear, we have talked about divides in this country now for a long time. And journalists and audience members alike are trying to understand what is going on in many parts of the country that we may not have heard of or didn't give people voice to prior to the election. And we are all on this learning journey. And the idea of Flyover is to get excitement on our weekends with Carrie Miller at 3 o'clock on Sundays, and to get callers to call in and talk about what's on their minds, and to allow the voices in the Midwest to be taken across the country, since parts of the Midwest absolutely swung this election.
And what I've been telling people who ask about, well, why do this, is there's real power, and we discovered this on Indivisible, in letting people from a small town in North Carolina or a small town in Indiana, and this all happened during Indivisible, make an argument that comes from lived experience and hard-won wisdom. That's how I think about it. Make an argument for why they think the way they do to people that live in lots of other places. They are going to be much more persuasive and genuine than I can ever be if I just sit here and spew out, you know, political views or whatever. So the power in flyover is your voice in Indiana and your voice in North Carolina and your voice in Texas talking about why you think the way you do. And we think that that's unifying in a way that a lot of media cannot be.
Right. And yeah, we have the medium to do that. And it's about an understanding, right?
Right.
It is not a, I believe this, you believe that.
And you're a jerk because you believe that.
And I'm trying to get you to believe what I believe.
Right,
that's not happening.
Exactly.
Right? But understanding, because at the end of the day, we probably all have some similarities in how we want to be treated, how we want to live our lives, right?
Right.
And I think this is a place for people to be able to speak up. And so I'm thrilled. And I got to tell you, Carrie Miller, because by the way, she does report to me, everyone. I just want you to know that that's clear. But the fact
that was
is,
clear before the show.
Yeah,
too,
yeah.
Let
me
tell you.
But she can take a national show and really manage it well. And so I'm thrilled that we have someone of her caliber able to do that.
I appreciate the chance, Nancy. One last question before you slip out of here. You've been in the job for a little bit more than a year. What do you know now about the job that you wish you'd known at the beginning?
I realized that all of the different platforms, I almost hate using that word, but all of the social media and websites and radio and our reporters and our editors have to be Swiss Army knives these days. You didn't have to do that 20 years ago. You had one medium you needed to serve. And so as I look at the challenges of training and getting everybody to be comfortable being on the radio and writing words and writing great headlines and not doing broccoli news. That's what I see as a challenge.
Right.
I would have still taken the job, even with that.
Good to have you here. We'll see you in 6 months. This wasn't so bad,
okay,
right?
Okay, wasn't so bad. Thanks, Carrie.
Nancy Cassett, Executive Director of News and Programming for NPR News.